Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are in Johannesburg. We are talking venture capital. We're talking a billion rand, and we're talking to, you know, the founders of a new fund. It's called, Conducive Capital. They are looking to raise about $50 million in the next couple of years, for investments. In and around, I'm hoping, South Africa, but we're going to be getting a little bit of the story around, what it is that they're trying to do. And we are joined by some veterans, in this space. First is Clive Butko, and then secondly, we're also joined by Michan, right?
Either way.
By Mitch and Adams. And both of them, are, the founders of the fund. Clive currently is founder and former CEO of Kalon Venture Partners. And then, Mitch is co-founder of Ozo. That's a fintech platform that we have featured on this particular platform. Gentlemen, greetings to you today.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
All right. So I think I'm going to start with Clive on this one, because I think what we are trying to do is to understand, what it is that you guys, are doing, and the vision, behind what you guys are doing. There's a lot of interest in the venture space. There's been a lot of movement, in and out of that, in and out of that market. A lot of criticism around the state of that, of venture capital in South Africa. So maybe where we can start is, we are here at a point where we're talking about Conducive Capital. What's led you, and this one I'm going to do for both of you, to say, what's led each of you to get to this point where you decided, okay, fine, this is something that we want to tackle? I'm going to start with you, Clive.
Now, thanks. I think I've been involved in building tech businesses for 40 years, believe it or not. When I just came out of university, I did a computer science and mathematics degree. And joined a company called Arthur Andersen at the time. It was later called Accenture. And I initially worked in Silicon Valley, built a couple of companies there, and exited a couple of companies. And it was something I always had a dream of really, helping and building entrepreneurs. So I spent 28 years at Accenture. I was the CEO of Accenture South Africa, helped build that into a multi-billion rand company. And about 12 years ago, I resigned, and I really wanted to start my own venture capital company. And I did that because there's unbelievable minds in this country, incredible minds, incredible opportunities. But what there's a shortage of is capital. Yeah. So I started and founded Kalon Venture Partners. I was the CEO of that for about 9 years. And at the end of December, I decided we had deployed our capital and I wanted to raise a big fund, as you said, a $50 million fund. I contacted Mitch. Mitch had left. I'd met Mitch during one of our investments with Ozo when I was the CEO of Kalon Venture Partners. And I'd met Mitch there. Always been impressed by Mitch, spoke to Mitch about starting a new fund. Took a while to convince him to come and start the new fund. And we decided we want to start Conducive Capital, really just to be, yes, South Africa is a very much a cottage industry for venture capital, but we wanted to try and make more access to capital for these unbelievable innovation that is coming out of South Africa, that's coming out of Africa. And that's why we are where we are today. We've formed this new fund. The vision of the fund is really to help leapfrog the next level of innovation, to accelerate innovation in South Africa and take that innovation to the world. And that's why we're sitting here today.
Okay, cool. I'm going to come back to, some of your previous experience just now, but Mitch, on your side, what's the story? How do you end up here? Obviously, there's a previous relationship that Clive has just talked about.
I feel more like an imposter in this industry. I never knew what venture capital was growing up. Never seen it as a career path for me. Nor was entrepreneurship ever a thing for me. I guess that's just a new word that we've slapped onto what was happening before, call it hustling. So I'm more of a creative, but went into software development. From software development, I realized I could take the logical and the creative and start creating things. That's where the entrepreneurial flair came in. Got into fintech very early and throughout my years, I would say became one of the stalwarts in payments in particular. Then started Ozo with Thomas Pace and Lyle Eckstein. And that, I guess, showed me the world of venture capitalism because we needed to raise money. So I was on the other end, essentially pitching to a bunch of people and seeing the flaws in things, seeing also what I liked and didn't like about it. And then coming out of that, I did a bit of an exit and wanted to sow back into the country. I saw the gap between VC and people starting businesses, which is where I've now slotted myself in with Aeon's creative technology that is called venture building. And in venture building, again, I noticed more gaps there and almost looked at this as IKEA, what IKEA has done. They own the forests that gives them the wood where they can build their own furniture and then the retail stores to do the selling. So I have not seen anybody owning the value chain for VC. It's always passing on to the next guy. Like, I'm done with this company. You take it now. Yeah. There's the ideas phase. There's the venture building. And then I had a new problem of I need to pass this on to a VC, which is anybody out there. Clive coincidentally came to speak to me. Like I said, it took 3 months or so. But essentially that IKEA idea kept playing in my head. I need to be a part of the VC space as well. I always thought I would stop in the venture building aspect. But I need to play a part in the VC space as well in order to grow these guys forward, as well as knowing some of the problems that were faced when we were raising funds. Perhaps I can maybe remedy that in some way, but also like who better to start with than Clive? I mean, I was very shocked that Clive actually approached me. It's such a massive figure in VC and he comes and says, I really want to work with you. I'm like, wow. I think the first month I had to just think, am I dreaming? Yeah. Constantly pinching myself. But, eventually I said, look, I can learn a lot from this. I'm not coming into this saying I know everything. I can learn a lot from Clive, but also because I'm coming out from an outside perspective, I think I can bring a lot of innovation to the industry as well.
Okay, cool. So with your stories, you know, in hand, you know, giving us a little bit of context into where you guys are coming from, one of the big commonalities that both of you have is having started and run, you know, ventures, and also both of you have helped other people, you know, to run businesses. One of the elephants I want to get, you know, elephants in the room I want to get out of the way quickly in this discussion is I'm talking to two gents, but one of your stated intentions is to help Black females. Help us with the disconnect. Clive?
Yeah, I think, I've been doing this for 40 years and, it's about give back. For me, this is about, I'm very, very passionate about building businesses. I'm very, very passionate about, you know, creating, fixing the wrongs of the past in this country. And I think we're very blessed, both Mitch and I, with the skills that we've got. There's just not many skills in South Africa who really understand how to build. And I'm going to focus on tech businesses here. We're not building carpentry businesses or hairdressing salons. We're building tech businesses. And both Mitch and I have got, you know, immense experience at that. If I look at the venture capital world globally, there's just not enough. For one, there's not enough non-white venture capitalists. It's very, very low globally. It is getting better, but it's still very, very low. And if I look at the amount of money going into Black female entrepreneurs, it's extremely low. So we just saw this as an opportunity of really saying, well, how can we make a difference? You know, we can make a difference by investing capital, but it's actually not about capital. It's the easy part. The hard part is actually helping build the businesses. So we thought, well, let's start Conducive Capital because this really could be an opportunity for us to give back and help train a segment of our population, Black women, that there are very, very few Black women in venture capital in this country. So when we chatted to funds like the South African SME Fund, we spoke about that, and they said they would even fund us taking on Black women to mentor them, to coach them, and to create that next generation of venture capitalists. And for me, this was just like heaven, because I thought this is exactly what I'm looking for. You're not, Not that we had to be forced to do it to do it. We wanted to do it anyway, but someone else would fund it. I mean, that was ideal. So we want to take 5-10 black women, and in 5 years, you know, they must go on their own and raise a billion rand fund. And it's, and really, it's about the mentorship. You know, I've always known in my whole life, it's, you want to go far, you've got to go with others. You know, you've got to stand on the shoulders of the giants that become before you. Success leaves clues. And we've done that. We've made the mistakes. We can see around those corners now where most people, they're starting out today. And there are some people that want to start out today, but what they don't know is what they don't know. You know, we know a lot more than what we knew 20, 30, 40 years ago. So it's just, for me, it's just an ideal opportunity to really raise a big fund, help South Africa, create jobs, you know, increase the fiscus, but at the same time, train black women into venture capital. So if we can align all these dots, I think we can make a significant impact to South Africa.
Okay. I like the fact that you do have that stated intention, you know, and at least with the 5 to 10 number, it seems manageable, right? You're not spreading yourselves too thin, and you could probably give, you know, each one of these VCs that you guys choose the love and attention that they need, because I think a lot of the times, a lot of people that are taking on any type of mentorship, whether it's of a business itself, or in your case, you're literally raising fund managers in essence, is that, you know, that care, you know, that personal connection and just understanding, it seems to lack, you know, quite a bit when you talk to people that go through some of these, you know, programs. People have different names for them: ESD programs, venture building, venture capital, accelerator programs, you know, all of the incubation, all of these things. So Mitchin, maybe you could give us some insight into the mechanism, you know, whatever mechanisms you guys are going to be making use of. I think off the bat, the easy one that people will try to understand is, how are you picking who you're working with? Are you like fresh, you know, to say, you know, this person could be a VC, let's start you out, or someone who's already in the space and, you know, helping them to grow? How are you guys thinking around some of those things?
I think that already tells you the reason why we need to do this, because just going on LinkedIn trying to find black women in the space is ridiculous. If you find somebody that is well-skilled enough, they've got a job in a big corporate bank. And they're just going to be stuck in that cog, carrying on, earning their 10% increase year on year, and then get to a point where they retire. But no real generational wealth is being generated there. You want to make a massive impact, and VC is a way to do that. Everybody that runs VCs goes on to be, you know, mega wealthy and make other people wealthy. So, yeah, for me, it would be going for these experienced women that are in the corporate spaces and kind of just lifting the roof off for them and saying, your ceiling's not here. You can actually go much further than this. Come join us, see what it's about. Also looking at the younger ladies that are getting into asset management, but how small is that pool? It's already very minimal. So I think just the fact that we just stated that we're looking to empower black women, maybe that has gotten to the ear of a young lady that's about to go study, and she'll spend 3 years, and 3 years later, there's a job for her waiting with us. And then we can groom them and grow them. And hopefully by that point, we would have had these experienced ladies with us, passing that on, because you want that level of relatability as well.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word, we don't want to be mansplaining things to people. you don't want it to come across like that. You want it to be coaching. But what I've learned from coaching is relatability is very important. You want somebody with the same background as you, the same sense and values and models on life. And your perspective. So female to female coaching is going to be great, better than what we can do. But the experienced ladies, I think because they are experienced already, they spent years in corporate, they wouldn't have an issue with us accidentally mansplaining to them, but understanding that's coming from a good place and me coaching and assisting, and then they can pass the buck on.
Let me just add to that. So I think I mean, Mitch is spot on, but from a process point of view, there's two types of coaching. And I think back to my own life, I had incredible mentors. I had a sales mentor. I had a leadership mentor. I had an entrepreneurship mentor. And these are the three guys I sort of climbed under their wing. And they made me who I was. They saw something in me that I never saw in myself. So if I think back to my success, it was all about people that mentored mentored me and they took care. And the way they did that with me, which is the way we want to do that with these young ladies, is it's about both formal mentoring and informal mentoring. So sometimes just you sit in the meeting, you sit in the investment committees, you sit in the board meetings, you just listen and learn how to do it. And then that's the informal stuff. And then there's the formal stuff where we actually want to say, we're going to run a course on this topic. We want to run a course on this topic. We want to run a course on unit economics in a software as a service business. So I see it both being informal mentoring and formal mentoring to get those 5-10 black women to a point that they can actually walk away from Conducive Capital in 5 to 10 years. I mean, it's weird. We actually try to build people to walk away from us, but that's how you actually create a bigger ecosystem in this country. Instead of having South Africa is a cottage industry in venture capital. We want to change that from being a cottage industry, but we need more good fund managers. Because if there's more good fund managers, the capital's there. But that capital is going to private equity asset class or the real estate asset class. It's just not going into venture capital asset class. But I think what the difference Mitch and I can make is I think we'll unlock a lot more capital to go into the VC asset class if we have experienced managers. You speak to every manager and you go and they say, first-time money, sorry, I'm not investing in a first-time fund manager. So no one actually gives you that chance. How do you actually get the chance if no one's going to give you into a first-time fund manager? So we want to make these fund managers not first-time. They'll be second-time fund managers. And hopefully that will unlock a lot of capital, hopefully billions of rand, that we could take into the South African economy and to grow the next wave of innovation in this country.
Maybe we can go down that specific rabbit hole, Clive. One of the biggest criticisms in South Africa around VC is that South Africa's venture capital industry isn't true venture capital because your fund managers approach an investment with the idea of a return as a almost a guaranteed return in mind, sort of a private equity type of mindset, as opposed to I won't call it true VC, but I guess the model that we see in the United States, where literally you're betting on the person. I think, yeah, if Adam Newman from WeWork has taught us anything, is that you're betting on the person and not necessarily the idea. People seem to have faith in the person and they're willing to, you know, back what's happening there. And talking to a number of founders, that tends to be what we hear, you know, to say the guys aren't willing to, you know, come in with us from, you know, the ground floor. You know, they want to catch up with us, you know, once we're on the 10th floor, once we are, you know, up there, you know, your thoughts on something like that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you look at typical capital raising let's take a tech venture. To be the seed investing. So that's where you get your rich uncle or your family, fools and friends, as they call it. Then there's angel investing, which is early stage. You've got a product, you might have one or two referenceable clients, and then the angel investors. And typically seed investors, angel investors are investing their own capital. Some of the people that have made a lot of money, they're now investing, they want to give back and they're helping. I've made quite a few of my own personal investments as well. Then you get venture capital, then you get private equity, mezzanine finance, and then RPO, whatever it might be. So I think that's very important to understand. Venture capital typically, globally, and maybe less so now globally because of the, you know, the cost of capital has gone up significantly. Yeah. But the risk, it's about taking risk. And South Africans are not big risk takers. So they want us to invest later stage into growth capital. But I'll give you an example that when I was the CEO of Kalon and we made 11 investments, all of investments are doing well. But three of those investments were very much, they weren't venture capital investments. They were actually angel investments. One had 10,000 Rand, another one had about 15,000 Rand, another one had 25,000 Rand. They're all doing millions of Rand now today, 2, 3, 4 years later. So I think that, and why did I do that as the CEO and why did I, you know, sell that to my investment committee? Because I've built so many businesses. I've seen the road ahead. I've been on a board. I've been the advisor. I've been helping these businesses. And I know when you get a second, third time entrepreneur, they will pivot. They will find a way to do this. If it's a first time entrepreneur, it's hard because they've never seen the road ahead. Again, they don't know what they don't know. But we knew we could coach them. We could tell their strengths and weaknesses and really help them with their weaknesses. We could help them learn what they don't know because none of us know it all. We're all on a journey. So we invested in those entrepreneurs, and it was all about the team. We looked at that team and said, this team, look here, they might be going down this path at the moment, but if it doesn't work, they'll pivot and they'll go to another path. And that is a great entrepreneur, whether it's in America, whether it's here in South Africa. So two of those three businesses we invested in, what they're making their money on today, and they're doing $5-6 million a month, were completely different to what we invested in. But we invested in the team. So if you look what we invest in, what we, Evan says, well, what are the three top criteria you invest in? And I'll talk about my five T's now. But if I talk about three T's, it's team, team, and team. You know, you've got to get your team right. If you don't get the team right, because the team can pivot, the team will find a way. They will find a way. So what do we invest in? Team, best team on the planet. It's got to be the best team on the planet. I'm not investing in a 21-year-old straight from university. I miss out on some opportunities. I know that because they will be unbelievable. But typically, if unless they've had experience, they've come out from some sort of industry, they've got good industry expertise, they've built a startup before, your risk profile of them having done it before goes down significantly. So then there's a team, then there's traction. So they have to have traction. And so it goes to your point. So typically, venture capital in South Africa is where there's quite a lot of traction. They're really doing a couple of million a month or $1 or $2 million, and then your risk is substantially mitigated. Product, they've got a product and it works. It's disruptive. It's 10 times better than anything else in the marketplace. Then the target addressable market. It's got to be, yes, you need your beachhead market that you're going to tackle first, but you need to know it's a very large target addressable market. And the last T really is about the tenacity of the entrepreneurs. They need to be unbelievably tenacious. They're not going to give up. They will go and go and go, and they will find a way. They are curious. If things aren't working, they will pivot and they will find another way of doing it. So I think the key thing here comes back to why venture capital is still such a cottage industry. We don't have enough entrepreneurs that are venture capitalists. If you look at America, they call it playing it forward. And the Americans play it forward. So you get the Newmans of the world and you get all these other guys that have built their own businesses. They then become venture capitalists. But they're actually operators behind the operators. They're the entrepreneurs behind the entrepreneurs. Venture capital typically, excluding conducive capital, because both Mitch and I are entrepreneurs. So we are operators. We understand what they're going through. We can empathize what these guys can go through. But most, in all honesty, and I'm not knocking anyone, most venture capital in South Africa is coming back from private equity, accounting, legal, actuarial. 90%. That's their background. They don't really understand what's those criteria metrics to measure a software as a service enterprise business. They've never done it before. We have, and I think that's where Mitch and I are in conducive capital. That is our unique value proposition. That is our fundamental differentiator. We are entrepreneurs backing entrepreneurs.
Okay. I love, you know, where you've taken the conversation because, Mitch, and I'm going to come to you here because you are, you know, a little bit fresher in the game than
50 years fresher, but
than Clive is, and I'm sure that you've had to raise capital recently. For you, it's two things: just your thoughts around that aspect of what this environment is like for people trying to raise fund. You know, the whole private equity versus VC aspect, but also just touching on something that Clive was talking about, the background of a person who becomes a VC in your view, because, and I'm asking that as a follow-up to what you were saying earlier on about identifying the types of people who are maybe in a corporate or something like that, right? Does a person need to have been a business operator? Like, how do you, and if not, how do you bridge that gap? Yeah.
Jeez, loaded question. Firstly, Clive's 100% right. It's your accountants. There's nothing wrong with these guys at all, but they don't have business experience. To quote Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until you get smacked in the face. Accountants have never been smacked in the face in the sense of running a business. So when they give somebody money and these guys aren't performing or something went wrong and the guys had to pivot, they're not understanding that. They're just looking at the metrics. You're not hitting the numbers and not really supporting the entrepreneurs. And that's a lot that I've seen. It's a lot that I'm getting from people right now that come to us. The interesting thing is VCs go out hunting and they want deal flow. Have you ever seen it where deal flow comes to you? Because they want to work with you. They're getting offers from other people, but they want to take your capital rather. That's what we see happening. And that's because we're approaching it very differently. We're going to be there to support them as the team, as Clive was saying, team is quite important. But looking at it from the other side, I mean, I was raising capital as well. You look at it like nobody wants to take a risk. You have to almost make it risk-free for a VC to invest in you. But being now on the other side, it's money's not free.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, also, we can't compare South Africa to the States. We are an emerging economy. That's a capitalist economy that's been running for years. 300 million consumers. How many of South Africa's population are actually consumers? So running an MVP there, you can make $1 million. Running an MVP here is going to be 100,000 rand. And further to that, we have our historic issues. We're only 30 years into a democracy. And I don't think, as a society, enough's been done to progress the majority of the demographics. So we're kind of still in the same place where we are. So for somebody that's trying to make it out, I believe entrepreneurship's driven by a need to get better. Except like in Europe, as my father would put it, it's frivolous things. They're just coming up with ideas that are nice to haves and people are willing to pay for it. Whereas here, it's solving a problem always.
Yeah.
They're like, this is a problem and I hate this problem so much. I'm going to find a way to solve it and I'm going to fix it. All this guy really wants is money. That's the quick fix. And he'll take it from wherever he can get it. So if he's speaking to a VC and a VC is taking long and ask them to jump through hoops, they're going to be frustrated by that. Back in the day, you used to raise money by going to the bank, right, to get a loan. Why is that not happening anymore? Banks doing exactly the same thing, getting people to jump through hoops. So you figure you'll go to VC, you don't have to worry about repaying a loan because it's just shares. And if things don't work out, oh, well, there's no link to you. So you can't have this risk-freeness from a entrepreneur perspective as well. The entrepreneur has to put in some risk as well. And I think that's also a view that a lot of entrepreneurs have of VCs, that they're going to get this risk-free ride. These guys are just going to give money and they can run wild with the money, lose it, and then just go to the next round. And a VC is well aware of that. So again, if we look at the States, look where it is right now. They took that approach of just willy-nilly throwing money around. Now there's all these retrenchments happening, a whole bunch of companies shutting down that side. People have lost money like crazy. And because we're watching it from the outside, VCs are learning from that. And they adhere into that risk and saying, how do we block ourselves from feeling that same pain? So it's all about learning from other markets. And that's what it's probably going to make this market a lot more mature than the States even. Silicon Valley is starting in, and I use that very loosely because it's not actually Silicon Valley, but it's starting in South Africa.
Yeah.
Cape Town ecospace is growing. I've seen a few things in Joburg where they're trying to create a Silicon Valley vibe. And the rest of Africa is doing it as well. With us learning all those mistakes and not banging our heads and just rather leapfrogging and going to the next point, this is where I see that innovation coming in. But if we're going to have people trying to implement exactly the same thing that's happening there, but still wanting to maintain the risk with our historical issues of entrepreneurs just wanting money.
Yeah.
Like, just give me the money. I know what I'm doing. Don't worry about it. We're not going to move anyway.
Yeah.
We really need somebody to come and bridge that gap, educate the entrepreneur as to why they have to jump through these hoops, why the money is not free, and what it's going to unlock further moving forward. You can't really educate a VC. They're doing their thing. So the only best thing to do is start your own VC, which we've done. And again, where's that money coming from? Like I said, it's coming from banks. At the end of the day, we're not going to get money from Adam Newman. We have to put our own money in, and then we have to convince private equity to, this is the wild risk that they're taking with us. Everything else they're keeping very safe, and this is a wild bet. Then you also have your different approaches to VC. You have the guys that's treating like a roulette table. They go in there and they just like put on every number. Put something on every number. One of these is going to win, and then we'll balance out our losses afterwards. That's what most people want, is somebody that's just crazy, that's just writing all these checks. And I'm seeing a few guys come out saying they're going to be the first check to ever be written to a company, these first check funds, which is great. I think there's a place for that, but that's brand new happening in Africa. Completely brand new. So because we are emerging market, it is where it is right now. We have to accept it. The system will change, but it will change adhering to lessons learned. So it won't be exactly like the States, but it's going to be a completely new monster, learning new lessons as we leapfrog, and we'll get to a point where we are ahead of the States. And what that is, we don't know. To Clive's point, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to figure it out. But entrepreneurs just need to have patience and maybe educate themselves with the VCs in this.
You know, one of the things that I think about is, in the world of sustainability, there's a lot of discussion around this just energy transition, all of that stuff. And one of the ideas proffered is to say, well, you know, through the Industrial Revolution, you had Western countries that, you know, had carte blanche, you know, over, you know, all of these fossil fuels, and it helped them to industrialize and to get to, you know, a lot of the foundations that have gotten countries to where they are. And I can't help but to draw somewhat of a similar parallel with VC to say that in a country like South Africa, your VCs as well as your founders have sort of been forced to take a disciplined approach to capital allocation almost from the get-go. You sort of have to think about it from a disciplined approach, but a lot of what has helped to create what are called FANGs, for example, you know, the Metas, the Googles, the Amazons, you know, of this world, was, you know, throwing a lot of money, you know, in a quote unquote undisciplined way. And, you know, it created these now $1 trillion, you know, companies. I think about Amazon. That company went for years without making any type of return. And I cannot think of anyone in this current environment who would allow, you know, a company to make, you know, those types of losses. Yeah. Anything to that?
Yeah. If I think of Ozo days, I remember that exact thing. We were making a profit. And you had this, almost this pressure to make a profit. And that's what we were striving for constantly, pushing towards it. But I remember Clive in particular sitting in the meeting saying, why did we give you money if you're making a profit? You're supposed to grow, spend it. So if you're making money, hire more. Which is it's a weird way of thinking, that you're being funded to grow. So you should never be profitable while you're still growing. The fact that Facebook and Amazon have proven the use case to us is great. So you can always fall back on that. If we were the pioneers of that model, it would never happen in South Africa. There's just, yeah, too little money, too much risk-averse money. So I'm glad that it's happened first. Again, we're learning the lessons from there, and it's a model we can base ourselves on. But that also then creates this path for commonality, where people are like, I'm the Uber of phones. It's the Uber of food delivery. You can't be the Uber of, you can't be the Facebook of, you can't be the Instagram of. You need to be brand new. So take those lessons, incorporate it in there to give the comfort to the VC, but be very innovative in the way that you're approaching it. Just to digress a little on that, I've always believed that the Western culture moved forward and innovated and went into the industrial era because of a need. They had too many problems. Africa had enough sun, they had enough vegetation, animals. They didn't really have to innovate because there was no need to do that. Whereas the Northern Hemisphere, they were dealing with the really extreme winters. They had to get coats, so they started hunting. They had to, you know, further their weapons, further the way they cultivated food, the way they got around. And I think that's where all the innovation came from. Yes, all the oil findings and all of that all happened later on during the industrial era. But building up to that, when they started with colonization, they're like, I don't like where I am. I need to find a better place. Let me build a ship, massive ship, get some gunpowder to protect myself. And they had to create those inventions and build on each other's successes. Then they came down to colonize, coming with all this innovation, built off of hate of where they were, to a place where people loved what they had and there was complacency. And we all know what happened. History has told the story. Now I think we got the inverse, where in the first world, in the Western world, you got a lot of complacency happening.
Yeah.
And here you got a hate of the situation that's carrying on. And therefore you're getting more innovation coming through here. You're also getting bigger populations coming through. Everywhere else is dying out. So it also tells you why a lot more VC money is coming into Africa, why it's not coming into South Africa. Maybe we can touch on that a bit later. But in Africa, it's coming here in particular. And I think that inverse is just going to exponentially grow over the next few years. Which again, we're going to see a brand new monster of VC and not what you're seeing today at all. It's the evolution.
Let me just add to that. I think, you know, it's quite interesting. If you look back to 2021, 2022, you know, capital was basically free. The interest rates were zero. Now we're sitting at 7-8%. The cost of capital is extremely high. Yeah. So if you think about what incentivized the investors and entrepreneurs, what incentivized entrepreneurs was grow at all costs. Just chase that top line, don't worry about the bottom line. And the entrepreneurs were incentivized to do that because if they grew at 200-300%, 400% per annum, they raised capital at 5-10 times what they raised their previous round. So everyone was incentivized just to grow, not worry about it, including myself, because it made sense. You keep on growing the top line and you raise, as I was a great example of that, where you raise a significant amount of capital at in that case, was it 10, 11, 12 times what we had raised the capital at. It's unbelievable how frothy the markets were. And there were so many tailwinds again in the venture capital ecosystem. If you look at the storyline now, that has completely changed. Now, yes, we want growth, but we want profitability at the same time. So I'm not saying I don't want growth and I want profitability. There's something they call the rule of 40. And the rule of 40 basically says, if you take your growth number, say it's 40% growth and your free cash flow of zero, you're hitting the rule of 40. And you want to get the rule of 50, 60, 70, 80. So you're growing at 80% and you've got free cash flow of 20. You actually got the rule of 100. Those companies will raise capital because the whole thing has changed now. So this growth at all cost mantra has gone out the window completely. Rather raise less capital, make your capital go further, make it cost efficient or capital efficient growth. It's all about capital efficient growth. It's not just about chasing money. And one of the risks you've got is everyone was raising too much money. They were just spending and spending and spending and hiring more engineers and hiring more people and not worrying about it because they had so much money. And then if they grew the top line, the next $100 million will come in there. And VC's got a big, big smack. They got a big smack. They didn't lose $1 million. They lost hundreds of millions of dollars. So that narrative has changed. That narrative is different now. When Mitch and I go into conducive capital now, not the narrative of growth at all costs. It's a narrative of capital efficient growth. Yeah. I want growth, but I want you to be very capital efficient. So I want you to get to cash flow break even if you can. Because I also tell every single entrepreneur, imagine the check that I've just given you is the last check you ever get. So you have to make sure you can get to cash flow break even and wash your own face and you can keep on growing your business out of your free cash flow. If there's no more money coming from an investor, you're not an ongoing concern and your business will close down. So the game has changed.
The game has certainly changed. And one of the things that I think is most interesting is the fact that you have a changing environment, but you still have a lot of the same players in the, what you call this, in the game. And I guess one's ability to adapt, you know, to that environment is probably going to allow them to do well in this environment. And that's actually one of the things I really wanted to maybe pick your brain on, Clive, about the type of operators that do well, you know, either as founders or operators of businesses. And I've had this little theory for about the last year, and I'm glad that I have someone like you to actually come in and test this theory with. So my theory is this: When a normal person starts a business, because so much is said about small businesses, all of this stuff, a lot of people start small businesses. And, you know, whether it's a side hustle or whatever it is, you know, that's the frame of mind. But in my interaction with a number of different founders, when a person who comes out of a consulting firm starts a business, that person is trying to start a multinational. That person is trying to take over the world. I can point out a couple of people that I've interacted with. There's a young lady, Liz Letswalo from Masodi Organics. I think she's ex-McKinsey. Very, you know, sweet-looking person. But when you interact with her, the determination that this person has, you can tell this is not just a beauty care brand. This person is trying to take over the world. I think about the guys at Yoko. I think they're ex-Accenture guys. You know, they're also, you know, you can see they didn't start a small mom and pops. They are trying to take over the, you know, take over the world. I was in India in November visiting a number of tech businesses in Bangalore as well as in Delhi. And I noticed the same trend, ex-Bain, ex-McKinsey, ex-Accenture, ex. What is it that is being taught? What's in the water? At a consulting firm that gives people either the ability to raise a lot of capital, to have that global mindset. What's happening there?
I think, I'm just going to rewind. I'm going to come back to your question for a second. I think we confuse, and we use it interchangeably, not confuse, but we use it interchangeably, the word founder and the word entrepreneur. Because if I found a business, I'm the founder.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make me an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me an entrepreneur at all. So I wonder, for the listeners, I think it's important that there's no right and wrong of this. There's no, it's right to be an entrepreneur, it's wrong just to be a founder and you want to grow a three-people business. That's fantastic. You can employ three people, employ 3,000 people. It doesn't matter. There's no right and wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
So we not just have to judge anyone. In Kalon, we invested in about 1 in 100 businesses. And did it mean the other 99 were bad? No. They just weren't venture capital investable businesses where we can get a, you talk about going global, we can get a 10 to 100x return on our capital. So if we put in $1 million, in 10 years, we want that $1 million to be at least $10 million or $100 million. So we needed those people that you referred to that maybe think local, but they act global.
Yeah.
And that's what management consulting teaches you, how to build businesses. It teaches you how to run strategy. It teaches you about product, marketing, sales. It teaches you everything about a business. So you become like a jack of all trades. I don't think you necessarily become a specialist at anything, but you learn a lot about every single aspect of business. And that's why they actually make, or if I look back to my training, what got me here is that I got to know so much about business, but I'm not an expert at anything. I'm not, maybe sales, I'm an expert in sales, but I'm not an expert in banking. I'm not an expert in this. I can hire those people. So typically you get the generalists for the first 5 to 10 people that start a business, hiring the specialist, hiring the actuary, hiring the lawyer, hiring the accountant, hiring the product development guy, hiring the software engineering person. So I think that's number one. And so is it in the water? I think it's the training we get, in all honesty, whether it's McKinsey, Bain, Deloitte, et cetera, whoever it might be, we get phenomenal global training. If I think back, I used to go overseas twice every single month for 10 years. It was insane. And what I was doing, I was seeing some of the best mentors, the best entrepreneurs when I worked in Silicon Valley that were actually took me under their wing and they were training me. So you can just imagine learning from those top entrepreneurs, and that's the opportunity I had. So when I left Accenture, I was ready to go into the venture capital world. I knew how to pick those winners. I'd seen what success looked like. As I said before, success leaves clues. I can see around corners. I know what I want to invest in. I know what a winner looks like. So as I said, an entrepreneur and a founder is different. An entrepreneur is someone that can innovate, they can keep on innovating, they can pivot, they can look at local, they can look at what they're going to do with their businesses, you know, in 5, 10 years down the line. Do I want to just climb this little hill now? No, I want to climb the little hill to get to the bigger hill and the bigger hill and the bigger hill. And they know how to do it. They know how to actually plan 30 days, 90 days, 360 days, you know, 3 years to take a small business into a big business. Because that's what they've done their whole lives in the consulting environment. So it's a phenomenal training ground. I'm not saying it's the only training ground, but it's a phenomenal. If I look back for myself, and I can speak for myself, plus we've seen it all over the place. You referred to this young lady from McKinsey or Bain you mentioned a few minutes ago. We trained like that. When we go into our clients, we don't want to make them a local business. I don't go into a client to make them a South African business. We go into a client to say, how can we take these products and commercialize them? Do we go what we run strategy for them. We say, okay, is it vertical integration where we're going to just develop new products and take it to the same market? Is it horizontal integration where we're going to take your current product and take it to multiple geographies? And that's the type of strategy and the way we think about things. So maybe it's first vertically, we build more products, but then eventually we're going to take it out to the world. If I look at the Kaelon companies, most of those companies today are not South African anymore. They've got clients all over the world. One of the businesses we invested in is a cybersecurity business called Senmark. It's probably in 20 countries around the world. They're doing, you know, I can't tell you the numbers they're doing, but they're doing a very, compared to what we invested at, they're doing brilliantly. But they're in 15, 20 geographies around the world. But these are all second, third time entrepreneurs that are doing that. And a lot of them probably from a consulting background as well. So it's the mindset. Yes, the water, for sure. Or maybe it's the brandy, but I don't drink. But it's unbelievable how these guys can think big. But they think global, but act local. So act locally initially. Build your business initially, very much like Oz has done. And then you think globally how you're going to take that local business into a global business. Because if you really want to be a venture capital investable business, South Africa is not a big enough market. It's a great place. I always say build your business where you birth it. If you birth your business in South Africa, fantastic place to build it, get product market fit, get a repeatable and scalable sales motion. So maybe you get that first $0 to $1 million. You get the $1 to $10 million. But then the $10 to $100 million, you've got to be a global business. You're not going to do that unless you're like a Discovery or a, you know, Standard Bank or something like that. But even you look at those businesses, they're all going global now to become really big. So I think that's a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, thank you for articulating it, you know, like that. I had a similar conversation with the founder. Founder and entrepreneur, because he's been phenomenal at, you know, running his business. And he came out of, I think it's Deloitte, and he was telling me similar things to what you were saying. But I like how you articulated about thinking local, but acting global. I think that, you know, if someone was to write a tweet from this conversation, that's probably, you know, the point that needs to be taken. And funny enough, we've actually spoken to the team from Sendmark, you know, on this, on this particular platform. So quite familiar with that business. Gents, where I want to end off today's discussion, because I'm cognizant of time, is something that that Mitch brought up earlier on, you know, about the amounts of money that are coming into South Africa. I think by now we've already, you know, gotten to a place of understanding that there's a lot of local plus global, you know, type of thinking that VCs need to be having. A lot of the big capital raises that we followed over the last couple of years, whether it's an Ozo, Pineapple, Planet 42, all of those companies, Yoko, you know, there's a huge, you know, international element of the money, of the big checks that are coming in. So my question is just about how do we bridge, I guess, the gaps to bring more money into South Africa? I think some of the last stats that I saw, $170 billion America VC, but $5 to $6 billion Africa VC, and I think South Africa is getting 15 to 20% of that, which is a, you know, smallish amount, and then the rest is going to, I think Kenya is the fastest growing, Nigeria has been big, but I think Kenya is the fastest growing, and then you've got, you know, Egypt, you know, on the other side. So how do we get more money, you know, to South Africa, you know, just so that, you know, for the likes of Conducive, you're not relying, you know, solely on the banks and, you know, that type of thing. So, yeah, keen to get, you know, thoughts from both of you. Mitch, I'll start with you and then we'll end off with Clive.
Okay. This is not based on any fact. This is only opinion. I believe there's just not enough good ambassadors for South Africa in particular. So you look at what's happened over the last, call it, 15 to 20 years, Kenya, Nigeria, a lot of students have gone offshore, studied there, become doctors, lived in those areas, made friends, got the networks, told them about Africa and spoken it up, in particular Nigeria. And to unlock funding to bring it into Nigeria becomes easier after that. I think they're very good storytellers in that way. Look at South Africa. What the media tells about South Africa is ridiculous. You only see bad news about South Africa on the outside. People that travel from South Africa out don't put our country in a good light. People that now live offshore, that have left the country, also don't speak about South Africa in a good light. So we just have very bad ambassadors. And that has compounded over the years into this, like, we won't touch South Africa with a 10-foot pole. You got the rand that's weakening as well, which isn't giving us, it's not even doing us any favors at all. But we are the most robust economy in Africa to invest in. With our legislation is there, our human rights, our political stability, banking systems, all of that. We probably have the most stable economy to start a business in. We do need a lot more governmental backing. I do believe that's why the Startup Act is being pushed in a certain way. If we can get those things right, and we have the right ambassadors, it'd be great. Clive and I were on a call with people from Saudi Arabia. It was like almost mind-blowing to us that they didn't know much about South Africa, but they knew a lot about the rest of Africa. It's like, why haven't we heard about South Africa? Why would we want to invest in South Africa? A few years ago, somebody, we were looking at where we should domicile if we're not going to be in South Africa. Where else should we go? And Mauritius was always the place. And the guy that was on the call with us was saying, it's not about where you want to go in Africa. It's about where you're starting from to go in Africa. And they said, Mauritius is the place to go. And why? Because they've created, and this is where the word actually comes from, conducive capital. They've created a conducive environment for this, for businesses to start there and then spread out into the rest of the continent. Has South Africa created laws to enable that? Yeah, no. A small business has to pay the same tax as a big corporate. That's not fair. The BEE laws and the labor laws are exactly the same for a big corporate as it is for a small business. It's not fair. They need to change these things. And if those things change, and we have enough ambassadors going out, I think it's going to take time, but it's going to change the narrative. If we can be those first ambassadors, then that's it. We're going to be the first ambassadors, and I think we've already done our job with those Saudi Arabian guys.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's just to close out, but I think we have to, you know, from red tape to red carpet. And I think the most important thing for me is the government has to get, from an entrepreneurial point of view, or doesn't it, you know, small business point of view, up to SMBs, up to these real scalable, innovative rocket ships, they've got to get more friendly to entrepreneurs. You know, there's, Mitch mentioned the Startup Act. So there's an act in Kenya, in the deal in Congo. You know, there's a number of countries that got the Startup Act, and it's actually working for them. They really are, you know, being very, very favorable to entrepreneurs. South Africa is not a favorable country right now to entrepreneurs. I know someone from Endeavor who's a, you know, a big player in the ecosystem is helping work with Saab at the moment in making, to get to this red tape. And I've seen the first initial release, and it is not entrepreneur friendly at all. In fact, it's counterintuitive. So we need to get IP, intellectual property, be able to build a business here and take your intellectual property globally. You need to be able to, a lot of these type of things, if I think the government got more involved and immigration, if they let entrepreneurs come into this country, get visas, go to the Department of Labor, just give you a comparison to the NASDAQ. So the top NASDAQ 500 companies, I think 51% CEOs of those companies are immigrants. I mean, that's incredible, but they create thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs, hundreds and thousands of jobs, in fact. So if we could just be more friendly to entrepreneurs wanting to come into South Africa. Cape Town, there are so many people wanting to come to Cape Town and settle, but it's very, very hard for them to get a visa to actually come and build a business in South Africa. So I think the government has got a step to play here, a role to play here. And I think, and I'll say that if government can get more entrepreneur friendly, I think you'll see a lot more capital flowing into South Africa. Yes, there's a macroeconomic issues with South Africa. I get that. We're not going to change that. But the macroeconomic things, like the government being more friendly to the entrepreneurs, I think that can be changed. It can be changed on the ground. And if we can do that, I must be honest with you, I think there won't be one or two or 10 more competitors of Conducive. There'll be hundreds. And we want competition because we want there to be more and more money going into the entrepreneurial ecosystem. It's great to be where we are because there's not a lot of competition. But we actually want competition. What we really want is this ecosystem to get bigger, more and more innovation coming out of South Africa, more and more entrepreneurs want to come to South Africa and actually build these unbelievable rocket ships in this country. It's going to create jobs. It's going to, you know, reduce unemployment, reduce inequality. It's everyone wins. So if anyone's listening from government, government's got to become more friendly to entrepreneurship in this country.
All right. So that's where we end off for today. It has been a really great discussion, just talking, you know, to Mitch and to Clive, just around Conducive Capital. That's the new fund. I think if I remember correctly, they're looking to raise $15 million by mid-2024. And then they're going to get to the $50 million in the next couple of years, which gets us to the 1 billion rand, you know, mark for the fund. Talking about, I guess, the ethos and the philosophy, you know, behind that fund, where they are trying to, you know, help to uplift, you know, a number of, you know, black female VCs, looking at around 5 to 10, you know, and it was quite interesting hearing how they think they're going to be able to resource that, because you have a lot of people that are probably maybe in corporates or, you know, other areas that could lend their skills to this industry. But without a clear path in that particular direction, then a lot of people, you know, just decide to stay in that particular lane. Also, I think we spent quite a bit of time just talking about, you know, what it takes, the funding environment in South Africa, venture capital versus private equity, the fact that you sort of have this tension in a country like South Africa, trying to just make sure that you have a more disciplined approach to how capital is allocated versus what was happening, you know, in some of the earlier years in places like the United States. So it's quite an interesting one. I think the statement that was made is growth, but with profitability, you know, just so that, you know, you have that efficiency. And then we spoke quite a bit, you know, scratching a bit of a curiosity on my side about, you know, why management consultants, you know, seem to do well, you know, in the world of business. And, you know, I think the statement we got from there was, you know, acting local, but thinking local, but acting global, you know, because you have to do well in your home country. But if you really want that exponential growth, you know, you usually have to look outside of South Africa. And then just ending off talking about what it would take to get more of the venture capital funding, you know, to a country like South Africa, despite the country being the most developed economy, it's not the one that is attracting the most, you know, venture capital. One thought from, you know, Clive, just talking about, you know, making some of the restrictions easier. And then, you know, Mitch just talking about making, I'm just going to calling it marketing the country, you know, a bit better. He talked about the storytelling. So that's been it. It has been a really great discussion. Thank you so much, you know, to Mitch and as well as to Clive for just giving us your time and just talking to us about Conducive Capital. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.